You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back on Get Up, and did you see this? Denmark, inspired by their captain Christian Eriksen, has become the Cinderella story, advancing to the knockout round of the Euros. Take a look at this.
Ithwaite header parried. Strigger Larsen. Dahlberg is repelled. And the shot from Christensen finds the net. Denmark are doing this in style. It's pandemonium in the Parken.
Christensen with the goal of his dreams that may have just put Denmark in the knockout stages of the European Championships.
In fact, indeed it did. The Euros continue this morning. Two Group D matches. Czech Republic takes on England for first place in the group. That's on ESPN. Then Croatia and Scotland on ESPN2. Both matches also available on the ESPN app and begin at 3 Eastern time. And with that, I welcome you back to another hour of Get Up. We're coming to you live, as always, from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. They call me Greeny, and we are jam-packed. Let's go. It's time to get up with a testy Tampa Tom. Someone snubbed the GOAT. He is definitely not forgotten. Wait until you hear this. It's coming up right off the top. Meanwhile, the decision that will likely change college sports as we know them forever. We'll tell you exactly what it all means. Heather and Paul are ready to go. And then the Simmons solution. Wait till you hear how the Sixers see solving the biggest riddle in the NBA. All that and a whole lot more as we get up with you, and it starts right now with a fascinating glimpse into the mind of the greatest football player that ever lived. Tom Brady set to appear on an episode of HBO's The Shop. In a promotional clip that they released, Brady had this to say about an unnamed team who lost interest in pursuing him as a free agent during the 2020 offseason. He said, quote, "One of the teams, they weren't interested at the very end. I was thinking, you're sticking with that guy?" You can see on your screen the words he actually used. I can't get any closer than that. But as I bring the crew in here this morning, you know, D. Wood, there is the Tom Brady that we all know, and he is one of the most famous people in the world of sports and well beyond that. But then there's the Tom Brady you know. You played with him. And this sounds, you were telling us earlier, a lot like the guy you know and most of us do not.
That's the guy right there. That's the guy. You know, a lot of that was kind of shielded by the Patriot way, but it's the same guy that we see all on television during games where he's talking trash and hyping up the crowd. That's the real Tom. And I listen. I love it. I love it as a former teammate. I would love it as a player because that dude has so much competitive energy, so much competitive juice. That it just permeates to everyone, man, and to hear that about another quarterback, whether it's with Las Vegas or Denver, whoever he's talking about, that's the kind of juice I want to be around constantly.
Now, the speculation about who he's talking about was great fun to have yesterday, but Jeff Darlington, it's interesting because Tom Brady is a guy who has played his entire career with a chip on his shoulder. He was a sixth-round pick. 198 players were drafted in front of him. And here he was, at the age of 43, getting another one because someone decided they didn't want him. It's a fascinating look inside the way his mind works.
It is, no doubt. And by the way, I speak for America. We just want you to slip up and say MF-er. We want you to say the words. Maybe not the Disney execs, but certainly the rest of us. Look. It was a fascinating free agency for Tom Brady, and it is important to have perspective. It's easy now to say that every team except for the Packers and the Chiefs should have gone after Brady, but at the time, it didn't feel like that to be the case. And there were teams, for instance, the Las Vegas Raiders, who were in the mix until the late goings and decided ultimately, though, hey, we don't want to blow the entire thing up. We want to continue to see what we have in Derek Carr for a few years of Tom Brady. It's also, by the way, why general manager Jason Light, why head coach Bruce Arians? Like, I remember conversations with those guys. They were all in. They were like, we'd be crazy not to go get Tom Brady. So, yes, now that feels like it lacks real punch, creativity, anything like that. But at the time, it was a big deal, and the Bucks deserve credit for that.
Absolutely. Mike T., what's your perspective?
Yeah, to Jeff's point, there was trepidation in the marketplace for a very fundamental reason. Bill Belichick, in part, was moving on from Tom Brady as much as Tom Brady was moving on from them. He didn't play well against Tennessee in that playoff game, and it would be like Warren Buffett selling a stock and then having some financial planner say, hey, that's a stock we should invest in. When Bill Belichick walks away from a player, many more times than not, he's right. So given his age, given that Tennessee playoff game, given Coach Belichick's reputation, I think that caused a real chilling effect in the marketplace, and Tampa Bay obviously was a huge beneficiary of that.
Absolutely. So very quickly here, let's talk about regret. What team should most regret missing out on Tom Brady last year? Jeff Darlington, you're first.
Look, this might surprise some people, but it is absolutely, without question, the New Orleans Saints. Regret might be a strong word because they did what they had to do. Drew Brees decided late in the game that, look, I'm going to put my broadcasting career aside for one more season with the Saints. Sean Payton would have loved to have had Tom Brady on that roster. He would have had him last year and moving forward. Maybe it's not regret because they did what they had to do, but it is certainly in the back of Sean Payton's mind. You cannot convince me otherwise that he would have loved the chance to have coached Tom Brady. And it was close, guys.
It was close. Again, if Brees doesn't come back, the sense I've gotten from you and several others is that's the direction it was leaning. Mike T., how about you?
Oh, I think it's the 49ers. If Nick Bosa had stayed healthy, they would have won the Super Bowl. They have a lot of good young players on offense. Tom Brady would have played much better than all those other quarterbacks that played there last year. And if you're the 49ers moving the story forward, you could still trade all those draft choices and still draft Trey Lance. So they have a lot of regret from last year and into the future.
D. Wood, how about you?
Yeah, Green, I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos. And listen, when you look at that Broncos roster, man, they got a lot of young talent on that roster, particularly at the offensive skill. And to bring a maestro like Tom Brady in to help orchestrate and bring out the most of those guys, combine that with a championship style of defense that they have out there, boy, that Broncos team could have been scary.
Absolutely. Yeah. But to me, the answer here is pretty obvious. I would define regret as when you look back on something you weren't really enjoying and decide that you miss it. So to me, it's got to be the New England Patriots. When you watch him go down there and win a Super Bowl championship, you say to yourself, no, I was ready to move on. And maybe in retrospect, that didn't work out so well. I can't imagine any team and certainly any group of fans regret that any more than anybody else. So that was one of the interesting things from the NFL. But really the biggest story, the most consequential in sports yesterday, came from college sports. The Supreme Court of the United States decided unanimously that the NCAA cannot enforce rules limiting education-related benefits that colleges offer to student-athletes. The ruling will help determine whether schools decide to offer athletes tens of thousands of dollars in those benefits. And the opinions were scathing. Justin Kavanaugh wrote, "Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing to not pay their workers a fair market rate on their theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. The NCAA is not above the law." Again, it's very strongly worded, and it just packs a little more punch when the Supreme Court says it instead of someone like me. So Heather Paul and D. Wood with reaction. So Heather, for the sports fans out there who did not read all of this closely yesterday, some of them will be saying, well, wait a minute, does that mean now players are going to start getting paid? What did the ruling actually mean yesterday?
So to be clear, this is not pay for play, but it lends itself to more of that conversation. The immediate impact from yesterday's ruling is that campuses can now compensate their athletes for educational related expenses. That means laptops, study abroad trips, any expenses that come with internships, those types of things. But what it also does is the long-term impact that if enough justices agree with Kavanaugh, it could only be a matter of time before the NCAA's restrictions on compensation are considered illegal. Look, I can tell you, the university presidents are here to talk about the college football playoff, 11 of them. West Virginia University President Gordon Gee walked through the lobby here in the hotel, and he said he had a heart attack after he saw the news yesterday. So this has everyone's attention.
Had a heart attack. Did he give any context as to why? Like what was it about it that caused him to feel that way?
Well, just the significance of what it could open the door to down the road. I mean, I think this really strengthens future lawsuits against the NCAA regarding amateurism. And it's not just an it's not just related to the athletic department. This impacts universities as a whole.
Absolutely. So, Paul Feinbaum, and no one deals in this stuff more than you do, talking about it literally every single day with this incredible array of callers that you have on your radio show. When you see the Supreme Court of the United States say the NCAA is not above the law, what is your reaction?
Greeny, think about this. This is the first time the Supreme Court has heard a case involving college athletics since 1985, when they shattered the television model as we currently have, or the one that we used to have, and opened the door for what we're doing now. So it's very, very important. And back to Gordon Gee, who's been the president of many schools, including Ohio State and Vanderbilt. The reason why those presidents in that room ought to be having a heart attack is because they just rehired the man who led this organization to slaughter, and that is Mark Emmert. I mean, I'm done talking about Mark Emmert in terms of his competence. That's no longer the case. But if the NCAA allows him to continue, it's mind-boggling, and they just gave him an extension. Any other CEO in America would have been fired the moment that ruling came out yesterday. But Mark Emmert's got a 6-year extension.
And so, Damian Woody, I wanted to get a player's perspective as well. As one who played yourself at Boston College, when you read the words, nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing to not pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. You were one of those workers. What do you think?
Listen, I think that was a sentiment of a lot of people out here, Greeny. And think about this. Everyone, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about student athlete. Well, guess what? A lot of times, you know, we got guys who are playing these sports. They can't even take the classes they want to take because it interferes with the athletic part of it. So don't give me this mess about student athlete and amateurism when guys can't even take classes that they want to take. Okay, miss me with all of that.
Very simply, D. Wood, when you went to school, you were a student, but did you feel like football was your job?
Absolutely. I knew why I was there. I was there to elevate the program. I was there to bring money in for the university. Okay? Everyone says student athlete. No, the athlete part comes first and the student part is secondary.
All right. So that's the perspective that we wanted there. In the meantime, Heather is down in Dallas right now covering the continuation of the meetings here, the continuation of the process towards the possibility of expanding the college football playoff. Heather, what is the significance of today?
Today is clearing another hurdle, Greeny, and the commissioners are going to present that 12-team format to the 11 presidents and chancellors with the authority to change the playoff. My expectation is they get the green light to go do more work. Clemson University President Jim Clements was in the lobby. He said, more conversation, more talking about it. We'll see what the timeline is, but I expect them to do more work this summer and report back in September.
All right, so they're continuing to move towards a 12-team playoff. Paul Feinbaum, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with college athletics. These presidents just love to talk instead of getting things done. This should be about a 5-minute conversation, Greeny. There's nothing really left to do. You had some of the brightest minds in the business come up with this plan, and they were hired by those men and women in the room today. So this should be a rubber stamp, move on to the next step.
All right. It is a fascinating little juncture in collegiate sports, which, again, I think it is not overstating it to say may soon be changed forever in ways that they will make them perhaps unrecognizable from what we've been accustomed to. Heather with the coverage as the day continues. Both of you, thank you very much. Meanwhile, we continue next. It may be football's best division. Which star AFC North quarterback could actually be his own team's biggest issue? We'll get to that. Plus, it is a shot in the dark. Wait till you hear how the Sixers may try to fix Ben Simmons. Could it actually work? We'll answer that question next. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're back on Get Up. We told you earlier that two teams get to open training camp earlier than the rest, the Cowboys and these, the Steelers, less than 30 days from now. Big Ben Roethlisberger will be back for an 18th season in 2021. He has the fifth most wins and seventh most yards in NFL history. Meanwhile, Mike Tomlin returns for his 15th season. In April, he signed a three-year extension that'll keep him at the helm through at least the 2024 year. And after four seasons with the Steelers, James Conner is gone. He signs with Arizona, Pittsburgh replacing him in the first round, drafting Alabama running back Najee Harris. And so we take a look at the Steelers here, who are a fascinating team, a team clearly in a state of transition, especially at the quarterback position, and in a division that feels like it's getting a whole lot better. So realistic expectations for the Steelers are the topic. And Mike T, for quite some time now, you have been down on the Steelers. How do you feel?
5-12 if they're fortunate, because Ben Roethlisberger has a new quarterback in terms of a new center, and he's 39 years old. Last year, he was 30th in the league in yards per pass attempt, meaning he's not getting the ball down the field. And with a new center and a new left tackle, it's just going to speed his clock up. So even though love Najee Harris, like their defense, especially their front seven, I think they're going to struggle on offense. And Ben Roethlisberger is getting older. Those other three quarterbacks in the AFC North are getting better.
Yes, and I don't disagree with your general thesis. Jeff Darlington, though, I will make the point that sometimes I feel like we talk about the Steelers as though they were a bad football team last year. It's worth reminding everyone. It says it right there on the screen. They were 12-4. They made the playoffs. And so what is your perspective on realistic expectations for them?
Well, it's interesting to me because I go back and forth with this team. You know, 10 minutes ago, I'd say they're going to be 10-7, and I think that that's very possible. Tomorrow, I might think just like Tannenbaum, Ben Roethlisberger get hurt by the ninth week of the season and the season's over. So I do think that there's more potential here than maybe we're giving them credit for, though. The defense, even without Bud Dupree, feels like to me like can be one of the better units in the league. Roethlisberger, if he doesn't throw the ball downfield as much, I think can still be the quarterback that he was early last season and can be successful in that role, maybe a little bit more of a manager role. So, look, I know it's a different Steelers team. I still, though, think that they are capable, even in this division, of making a little bit of a run, maybe an unlikely run, in Roethlisberger's what feels like will be his final season.
So Jeff is thinking 10-7, and Mike T is thinking 5-12. Damian Woody, what are you thinking?
Yeah, listen, I think this is going to be a challenging season for Mike Tomlin, and we all know that Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season in Pittsburgh, but I think this might be the one. I mean, I got the Pittsburgh Steelers going 8-9 this year. Listen, there's no question that I think the Pittsburgh Steelers waited a year or two too long to exercise their future at the quarterback position. And we've seen the limitations that comes with Big Ben right now. Mike T alluded to it. He doesn't push the ball down the field. They got a reworked offensive line. We don't know what that's going to look like as far as will they be able to give Big Ben time to even push the ball down the field. And I just look at the teams in the division, guys. The Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens, to me, are the clear favorites in this division. And I just think the Pittsburgh Steelers, with their quarterback position, they have the worst quarterback in the AFC North.
Fair enough. And I can't disagree with any of what you said. But in this case, with all due respect to Mr. Tannenbaum, the Mike T who matters is Mike Tomlin. And that guy doesn't lose games. So I will go 9-8 just based on the confidence in him. And in that defense, the defense should be outstanding. You've got a great coach with an elite unit on the defensive side. Let's see what they can put together around their rookie running back. Okay, that's a piece of the football conversation today. But the really big news from the National Football League yesterday was about Las Vegas Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib, who became the first active NFL player to come out as gay. The 28-year-old Nassib made the announcement on Instagram yesterday afternoon.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that like one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds.
Now his team, the Raiders, responded to Nassib's post with a tweet that said, "We're proud of you, Carl." Nassib's former teammate at Penn State, Saquon Barkley, tweeted, "Much respect, brother." And Jason Collins, who in 2013 became the first active NBA player to come out as gay, tweeted, "Very proud of Carl Nassib. Incredibly happy for him. Can't wait to watch him play this upcoming season." The commissioner, Roger Goodell, released a statement saying, quote, "The NFL family is proud of Carl for courageously sharing his truth today. Representation matters. We share his hope that someday soon statements like his will no longer be newsworthy as we march toward full equality for the LGBTQ plus community. We wish Carl the best of luck this coming season." As we continue, the Simmons solution. Wait till you hear how the Sixers see solving the biggest riddle in the NBA. Could it actually work? Plus, he could be days away from a contract extension. Why one member of our crew says giving Baker Mayfield the new deal might be an enormous mistake. And we got time for Sneaky Hembo, and this one is for the big fella, Big Perk. Who is the only player with more steals than Ben Simmons since his first season in 2017? That's the question. The answer is next for Big Perk. Get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We are back, and here we go. The pressure's on you, Big Perk. Sneaky Hembo's got this one for you. We're talking about Ben Simmons. Who's the only player with more steals than he has since he came in the league in 2017?
Man, Greeny, this is a hard one. And you know what? I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler on this one. I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler.
That's a very good guess. He's close, but he's not the right answer. The right answer is Russell Westbrook.
Oh!
Russell Westbrook has 471, but James Harden, Paul George, and Jimmy Butler are all right there. You were extremely close. But as Hembo would say, close does not put the ball in the basket. And unfortunately, neither does this guy. The future of Ben Simmons in Philadelphia is very much in doubt after his team crashed out of the playoffs on Sunday. Yesterday, his coach, Doc Rivers, addressed what the team and Simmons need to do this offseason. Listen to what he said.
I believe, without going in detail what we're doing, I believe we know what the right work is and the right type of work and the right way to do it. After being here for a year, I really do believe we've identified what and how, and now we have to do the do part. We have to work to do it. It's not going to be an easy job, but it's definitely a job that Ben can do.
I'm fascinated by this, Big Perk, and Brian Windhorst joins us here. Wendy, what do we think he's talking about this work that they know they need to do, and it's a question of doing it?
Well, I can't say for sure exactly what Doc was talking about, but I can tell you what one of the leading suggestions to Ben Simmons is within the organization and within his circle, and that is to switch shooting hands, to go from shooting left, primarily left-handed, to shooting right-handed. This is something that has been on the plate for Ben Simmons for a long time now. He's obviously had issues with shooting since he came into the NBA, and he has been very reluctant to consider this. He is ambidextrous. He does do some things right-handed, and there's some belief that maybe he's shooting with the wrong hand. Now, that is a a big ask of any player to make. It's especially a big ask of somebody who's prideful and resistant. And if he is prideful and resistant about it, it won't work. But I definitely think it's something that is going to be discussed and brought to him over this offseason.
Remarkable. You know, our friend Jalen Rose, the week that we launched this show, so in April of 2018, said right here on Get Up, our friend Rose Stradamus said he's shooting with the wrong hand. I mean, Jalen has been saying that literally that long. So Big Perk, I mean, this is a 24-year-old man who's obviously played a lot of basketball in his life. Can you do that at this point? Can you change hands?
No, you can't do that. And look, at this point, he is who he is. And we're asking for too much out of him for shooting-wise. He just might not be a shooter, and that's okay. Change his position. Put him back to the power forward position that he played in college at LSU as a dual forward that could drop dimes and facilitate for others. A guy that's rolling to the basket. Ben Simmons has to get his confidence back. I'm not talking about whether he can shoot or not, but just attacking the paint and just finishing layups. And you know what Ben Simmons has to do? He has to look himself in the mirror and have some type of accountability. And when I say that, this offseason, he probably needs to take a break from social media, from all the distractions, lock himself in the gym, go to an isolated area, and work on his game. And that's not just shooting, that's overall. On a low block, finishing layups, going through dribble handoffs, lob threat, being alive to the basket. That's what Ben Simmons need, not to change his damn shooting hand.
Absolutely. And, Wendy, quickly, before I move on to other things, as an insider with us here, Magic Johnson said yesterday on the show they need to trade him. Big Perk suggested that he would be best off with a fresh start. What if the Sixers decided they wanted to explore trading him? How would that look?
Well, they could probably trade him to anywhere of 10 places right now. There'd be a huge demand for him, but not at the value of an all-star under a four-year guaranteed no-out contract. So that's really the challenge. And the wild card here, Greeny, Joel Embiid is due a contract extension this offseason, and if the Sixers ask his opinion on this, how he decides to answer that question could determine the next step with Ben Simmons.
Okay, so we will see where that thing moves from here. In the meantime, yesterday I had Magic Johnson here on this set, and I asked him if Kevin Durant is now the best player on planet Earth. This is what Magic said.
I think LeBron got one more year to be the man in this Kevin Durant's league right after that.
You're not willing to say right now Kevin Durant is the best player in the world?
I think Kevin Durant is the best scorer on this planet, in the world. I think that, yes, now they're running neck and neck. LeBron knows he's got to come back and have a great year, and his Lakers got to have a great year. But let's see what happens next season.
How important is that? He's been the best player in the world a long time. How important do you think that is to him, and what do you think he's thinking as he's watching Kevin Durant this week?
Greeny is very important to him. You know, we got egos.
Don't we all? So, Big Perk, I'm just curious because you have been one of LeBron James' biggest supporters, defenders, and all of that on this show since we came on. What do you think? Is Kevin Durant the best player now?
Greeny, look, I don't know what was going on yesterday. I don't know if it was because it was Monday coming off of Father's Day weekend, but all the old heads were tripping on national television yesterday. Kevin Durant is the best player in the world right now, and even Magic was tripping. I don't think LeBron James, I don't think he even gives a damn in year going into year 19 about being the best player in the world. Kevin Durant showed us that. The best thing that happened for the Brooklyn Nets and Kevin Durant, and I'm not wishing injury on nobody, and for the fans, was that Kyrie Irving and James Harden got hurt. Because we were able to see the Kevin Durant that we've been waiting on. And he was able to go into his bag and not have to sacrifice for others because he has other superstars on his team. Kevin Durant, hands down, if anybody watched him throughout the playoffs, averaged 35, shooting 51% from the field, is not going to say that and can sit up here and say he's not the best player in the world. They tripping.
And he plays great defense.
This has been going on for a decade.
Go ahead,
they've been playing each other for a decade. In the finals in 2011, Perk was there. It was Durant versus LeBron. It was Durant versus LeBron in the middle part of last decade with the Warriors and the Cavs. Durant hitting shots over LeBron, LeBron coming back. This is the continuation of what's been a decade-long rivalry. LeBron's great rival was not Kobe Bryant. It is Kevin Durant. It is a good rivalry. They're friendly. this is going to go back and forth, and I'm looking forward next year to having this conversation and seeing people change their mind again.
But did it feel to you, super quick, Wendy, like what Perk is saying, that in a weird sort of way, in defeat, the legacy, or at least the perspective, the conventional wisdom on Kevin Durant was elevated by what happened in the last week and a half?
And that's a yes, but that's a mistake, because Durant has been this guy forever. He was this guy in Golden State. He was 1-2 with LeBron in Golden State. And anybody who downplayed anything when he went to Golden State and somehow thought he was less than is lunacy. The man's a 2-time finals MVP, should be a multi-time MVP. And in my mind, there's nothing changed with Durant from 3 years ago to today. And the fact that he had an Achilles injury between now and then is only, makes his resume all that more impressive.
Love it. Great to see you, Wendy. Great to see you, Big Perk. Thanks, guys, for getting up, and we will see you tonight because we have a huge night of basketball coming your way on ESPN. Don't miss it. Let me run through it. It's a big night. We've got SportsCenter with Stephen A. It kicks it off at 7 Eastern. That's followed by NBA Countdown. Then we've got the Draft Lottery, and then we have Game 2 of the West Finals between the Clippers and the Suns, tipping off at 9 Eastern. So a fascinating and jam-packed night of NBA action tonight right here on ESPN. Meanwhile, we go back to football and Baker Mayfield, who is eligible for a contract extension right now. This is the point on the calendar where generally these things get done. Recently, Mayfield said that while he wants to sign an extension with Cleveland, he was also in no rush to get it done, adding that the situation will take care of itself. And I think it's sort of an interesting thing to look at. There are three quarterbacks from that class who've had great success. Josh Allen, who's been brilliant, Lamar Jackson, who's been a league MVP, and Baker Mayfield is coming off a really good year. They're eligible for the first times for contract extensions. They could do it right now. The team could do it. They could do it right now. They're also locked into their teams for at least two more seasons, depending on the circumstances. So, Mike Tannenbaum, if you were making the decisions, what would you do?
I would sign the other two in terms of Lamar Jackson. I would sign him MVP, Josh Allen, going to be an MVP. I would not sign Baker Mayfield. He has two more years to go on his contract. I could franchise him if he plays exceptional greenie. Kevin Stefanski, the head coach of the Browns, was very successful in Minnesota as their coordinator with players like Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins. They have a good football team. I would allocate those resources to the Denzel Wards, to the Nick Chubbs of the world, and wait and see with Baker Mayfield. I would make sure that he could string consecutive productive years together.
Yeah, that's the point. They don't have to do it now. They could do it next year if they choose to. But that timing, Jeff, we were talking about this yeah. morning before we came on the air. That timing is something that a lot of NFL teams are wrestling with.
It is. It's fascinating, actually. Carson Wentz, for instance, remember when he signed his deal and everybody around the league was, wow, that was pretty early. That came out of kind of nowhere. And then Dak Prescott, on the other hand, we spent months and months, really, actually years, talking about whether he would get his deal done. And you do have to find that perfect point. You know, to Mike Tannenbaum's point, like, you want to see what Baker can do, but if he does what you want him to do, he also increases his costs in the process. So finding that balance, finding that trigger point, is such a huge moment for GMs across the league. The Rams ultimately have to regret paying Jared Goff, considering their actions afterward. The Eagles with Carson Wentz. And then you look at the Cowboys with Dak Prescott. Perhaps they paid more than they would have if they had just done it a little bit sooner. So tough call for these three quarterbacks. Certainly the GMs with a tall task in front of them.
So I guess, D. Wood, I would put the question to you this way. If you were making that decision, have you seen enough from Baker Mayfield that convinces you, oh, yeah, he's my guy for a decade, let's go?
No, absolutely not. And Mike T. brought it up. You have a lot of time to determine whether you want to pay Baker Mayfield all that type of money. Remember, Greenan, this is one of the best roster. To me, in my opinion, I think the Cleveland Browns might have the best roster in the National Football League, outstanding offensive line, the best backfield in the league. Odell Beckham Jr. is coming back to go along with Jarvis Landry, and that defense is loaded with talent. For me, when I look at Baker Mayfield, I don't ever see Baker Mayfield being like a top five guy, a guy that can put a whole franchise on his shoulders. I think for me, it's about the moments, particularly in the postseason. Can he get to the postseason? Can he have those moments that elevate the Cleveland Browns? When I see that on a consistent basis, then I'll go ahead and pay him what he deserves.
Generally speaking, if these things are going to get done, they get done before the start of training camp. That's roughly a month, so keep an eye on that one and the other two as well. Meanwhile, as we continue, it is the DeGromination. Is Jacob DeGrom the most dominant athlete in any sport today? We'll discuss that and much more. It's Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back on Get Up with the performance of the night. Call it another DeGromination. Entered Monday, Jacob DeGrom, 11 straight starts, allowing one earned run or fewer. And the first batter of the game, Ronald Acuna, got a sense this was going to be a long night. That's 101-mile-an-hour fastball. Then it's Ozzie Albies. He chases a nasty slider. DeGrom got started fast, and then he gets stopped. He's the first ever pitcher to be checked for a sticky substance after the first inning. Glove, hat, belt, all smiles, no issues. Except if you were trying to hit him. Top of the second, DeGrom with a 1-0 lead after the Mets had bunted in the first inning to try and get one run because they knew that's all he would need. There he's got Abraham Almonte, and now he's got Dansby Swanson. DeGrom, 4 Ks in the first 2 innings. Third inning, he's cruising. Look at that play. Snags one from the air off the bat of Guillermo Heredia. Right back to him. Doesn't even need a strikeout there. A few batters later, it's Acuna chasing a fastball up and out of the zone. No hits through three. Fifth inning now. Second and third. But Pablo Sandoval pinch hitting and popping out on the first pitch. DeGrom in total. 5 innings. 1 hit. No runs. 6 Ks. Mets win at 4-2. They've won 7 straight games that he has started. Simply put, right now, Jacob DeGrom, is pitching as well as anyone that ever lived. His ERA is .50 in 12 starts. That's tied for the second lowest in any 12-start span within any season since this became an official stat. He has the lowest whip, lowest opponent batting average in any 12-start span within a season in modern history. Buster only joins us here as we're going to have a little bit of an interesting conversation. We wanted to put people together from different sports. So Buster representing baseball, Kendrick Perkins representing basketball, and Damian Woody representing football. Buster, I'll start with you. Who is the most dominant athlete in American sports today?
There's no question. It's Jacob DeGrom dominating Major League Baseball. Look, the standard for dominance for years in baseball was Mariano Rivera, the Yankees closer who threw the same pitch to the same part of the strike zone and hitters couldn't do anything about it. DeGrom is doing the same sort of thing, except he's not doing it for 3 or 4 batters at a time. He's doing it for 5 to 7 innings at a time, a 0.50 ERA, and he struck out 47% of the batters he's faced this year. Kevin Durant's the best scorer that I've ever seen. At some point, Patrick Mahomes will be the most dominant athlete in professional sports. Right now, it's Jacob DeGrom.
All right, so Buster, repping his sport. Kendrick Perkins, what do you think?
Oh, without a doubt, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. And you know why? Because he's been dominating for the last 3 years, Greeny, and he's still dominating. When you talk about a guy that weighs heavy on you, a guy that is polarizing, We talking about Shaq Light. And look, we're talking about a guy that is a back-to-back MVP, won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year last year. This year came back and could have won MVP again, but we get bored with the process. So when I'm looking at a guy that's dominating at his position and dominating the sport, I'm looking at what Giannis is doing right now. And to me, it's no other player in no other sport that is matching what he's doing for the game of basketball.
Buster, yell at him.
Yeah, Kevin Durant was beating him up in some of those games of that series. We just saw there was somebody better. There's nobody better than DeGrom right now.
No, you're absolutely wrong, because if you go back and check the box score, go look at Giannis' numbers. Giannis held his own against Kevin Durant. Those stats were even, so let's not get it twisted now. I'm not going to dive into baseball numbers because I don't really know it. But look, to the rest of the world, I always say that Kevin Durant is the best scorer of all time. But when we talk about the most dominant, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. By the way, Bucks in seven.
I like the throw-in. All right, D-Wood, let's get you in this conversation. Who do you think is the most dominant athlete in sports?
Yeah, since he's breathing all hard Granny.
Listen. First of all, I can't believe that Big Perk came out said that with a guy who's shooting air balls from the free throw line, talking about most dominating person in sports. Man, miss me with all that. But I'm going with Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle from the Los Angeles Rams, and here's why, Greeny. We talk about the great Patrick Mahomes and some of these, and a lot of these quarterbacks, but there's not one guy who dominates his position more than any other position. When you talk about in football, you ask any player out there who plays at the highest level at any position in the sport of football. I guarantee it's a consensus Aaron Donald. It's Aaron Donald, and the second best person is, man, he is in a whole nother area code, because that's how dominant Aaron Donald plays the game of football. Three-time defensive player of the year. That's a bad man right there.
Yes. I agree with Buster's choice, though I will say D. Wood's choice would beat up all the other choices if he needed to. But Kendrick Perkins, I have to come back to you. I'm nonplussed. We just had a conversation about who's the best player, LeBron James or Kevin Durant, and now the most dominant one is Giannis. I'm confused by your choice.
Yeah, but Greeny, you don't have to be confused, because I could break it down to you. Just because you're the best player doesn't mean you're the most dominant player. We just had this argument last week when Stephen A. was talking about when we did on First Take, when he said Shaq was the most dominant, but was he the best player of that time? So just because you're the most dominant doesn't mean you're the best player or the most valuable player. But when I'm talking about dominating, I'm talking about a guy that has changed the game, a guy that is hard to guard, a guy that is coming out there and giving you consistent numbers night in and night out. And that's what Giannis do. No matter what he do from the free throw line, when you look at that box score at the end of the night, he's going to have 34 points and 18 rebounds. Period.
Fair enough. All right. It's an outstanding debate, guys. Thank you so much for jumping in here. And speaking of debates, they will continue, of course, next on ESPN. First Take is on the way. Can Ben Simmons' shooting issues be fixed? Is Devin Booker the next Kobe? Stephen A., Max, Molly, and Kendrick will be there, too. It's First Take. They're 10 minutes away on ESPN.